It's time once again for another episode of the Franchise Business Radio Show. Broadcasting live from the Pro Business Channel studios in Atlanta. And now here's your host, Pam Curie.
Good morning. Welcome to the Franchise Business Radio Show. This is your host, Pamela Curie. And I'm really excited to say that we have a guest co-host in the studio today. Never a dull moment. Always a good time here in the studio of Pro Business Channel. I'd like to go ahead and first share who's going to be co-hosting with me this morning. His name may sound familiar to you because he has been on the show before. John Q, welcome.
Hey, everybody. How you doing out there?
The crowd goes wild, yeah.
Once again.
Once again, right? Stop the madness.
Right, yeah.
we're going to really have a great show today. We actually have a great guest as a call-in guest, and we're going to be talking about a really unique franchise opportunity. It's actually a concept that many of you have are very familiar with. But we want to look at it on a different level, this kind of concept. We're going to look at it from a franchise perspective. And I'm kind of giving a little teaser here with this particular guest because I've been working with him, and I'm just really excited to have him on the show. With that being said, Rich, would you mind just giving a bio on who we're going to be speaking with?
Absolutely. My pleasure. So Mark Gooden is president in Storage Authority Franchising. As a professional civil engineer, I was going to say civilian, but everything is professional civilian, has designed commercial developments and self-storage facilities for over 25 years. His self-storage expertise has been fine-tuned by designing, building, and managing three self-storage facilities he presently owns. Mark's experience from the trenches and his expertise in is apparent in two best-selling marketing and planning self-storage books available on Amazon. Mark is also uniquely positioned to provide simple, straightforward, and effective guidance in achieving industry-leading service and profits in the self-storage industry. So, Mark, welcome to Franchise Business Radio.
Thank you, and I want to thank both John and Pam for having me on today.
Absolutely. And Mark, again, Storage Authority is a self-storage made easy franchise opportunity. And if you don't mind, I think what would be really nice for our listeners is, could you kind of give us a little bit of history here? Tell us a little bit about your background, your history, and what made you decide to take this concept that we all know. I know I've used storage units in my past and decide to franchise it.
Well, it probably all started about 25, 26 years ago when I was in my civil engineering office, just a young lad, and a gentleman came in, and at 24 years old, he asked me to design a self-storage for him. And I said, sure, I'll be happy to design a self-storage for you. What is it? You know, that was back in the early 80s. And since that time, for the same gentleman, I would design one a year for him. And I would notice he would be the only one that would, after he left, he'd be going out fishing. He wouldn't be going back to work like all my other clients that were building, whatever else they might be building, shopping plazas and neighborhoods and whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it took me about a long time to figure it out. But eventually, I built my own self-storage. I built three self-storages, which I found the land, I designed. I went through the whole process. And, you know, it was very time-consuming. It took me a lot to understand that the concept and everything. And, as the years went on, it used to be build it and they will come. You could put a self-storage mm-hmm. anywhere and it would fill up. Mm-hmm. It's no longer the case. You know, now you've got to build it in the right location and you've got to, have sales and marketing and then it's a super successful business. But what got me into the franchise end of it is, for a while I was a consultant. I'd be called and I'd help clients, and sometimes the same clients every year over and over with the same questions. But then my co-founder, Scott House, gave me a call about 3.5 years ago. And he worked for apartment developers quite a bit and hotel developers. And he said their profits are dropping. They used to have 15% profits. And then it's, you know, slowly below 10%. He asked if I could help him out with his team to help these people build self-storage. And I started helping him out, but he realized that it was just more than an hour or two, that it's a very long process. But once you had the process, it was a process you could follow. And he was in the hotel franchising world, and he said, Mark, this is a perfect business for franchising. Now, why isn't there any other franchises out there for self-storage like the hotel? And I said, you know what? You're right, Scott. It's an idea whose time has come. And, you know, we started the planning and the process about 3 years ago. And basically right now we're going full speed ahead.
Wow. Well, you just hit on so many key points there that and John and I are going to talk about this a little bit later about what really does make a concept a franchisable concept. And a fragmented market is definitely one of those key areas that really does well for franchising. So why self-storage for the busy professional?
Well, self-storage is, the busy professional, first of all, you know, doesn't have a lot of time. And so what we've developed is a manager-driven system. We put together the platforms and the internet and the marketing and sales so that the manager can do that with the coaching of an owner. And usually that owner is a very busy professional. It does take some money to build a self-storage. So typically it is some busy individual that's been working and continues to work, and they can't afford to give up their job, or they don't want to. And so they've looked for, you know, other ways of adding to their income. And there's not many other items out there, other businesses, where you can do it at the same time you're doing your regular career. And then to make it even better, you know, where else can you develop a six-figure residual income in a sense, build a retirement nest egg at the same time, and continue your career?
Absolutely. Thank you for saying that. And one of the, actually, I was just having this conversation earlier with John, and I said, you know, what's so unique about this franchise opportunity and what makes it maybe a little bit less than the traditional franchise opportunity is very often people, when they get into franchising, they have to have an immediate income play because they have to pay their bills. Whereas this particular opportunity is, am I accurate, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I really view this as an opportunity to be a true investment play and a way to diversify and build wealth.
That is exactly correct. And, you know, a lot of our franchisees, they get in because, you know, 5 years down the road, you know, you're a doctor, you're an IT professional. You don't know what will happen 5 years down the road. And this gives them the opportunity to have any decision they want. They replace their income. They can continue to work or not. It's their choice 5 years down the road. And, you know, they don't have to worry about retirement, because when you sell a self-storage, you know, the business itself, even though it's been paying you a monthly income, it has a very large value to it typically.
So if someone wanted to get started in self-storage, I mean, what are the steps to make that happen?
Well, there's a lot of different steps, but, you know, the first step is to do some research on self-storage to make sure it's the business that you want to be in. You know, some people don't want to be in business, but, you know, it's pretty easy to do research. There's the national and local state associations. There's trade magazines you can order. So you have to make sure you want to be in business. And the great thing about self-storage is you don't do too much of anything. You do a little bit of everything. Yes, you've got to have an account. Yes, you've got to, you know, do some sales and marketing. Yes, you've got to keep your facility clean. So I think it's fun because you don't get bogged down in any one thing. And putting it all together with customer service, it is something that I truly enjoy. And I think most people that get into it and study it, it's something they're going to enjoy, because if you have your self-storage business in addition to your regular income, you know, you're talking about another 5, 6, 7 hours a week above and beyond what you're doing right now, at least in the beginning, until you really learn the process. So you've got to review self-storage. You've got to review your own goals. And then the next step is, you know, to decide if you're going to do it with somebody like us or you're going to do it on your own. Mm-hmm. And then once you've made that decision, it's just a process of finding land, getting the proper designs and construction, and then opening your doors with the right platform. I like to say this: it takes four things, four main ingredients in self storage. It takes expertise, it takes time, it takes money, and it takes systems and platforms to execute operations, marketing, and sales. Mm-hmm. And that's the great thing about franchising in general. Mm-hmm. We provide those things, so typically we help in all four of those areas, and you've got to learn the other ones as time goes on, but we provide the background so you have that experience to start with.
Got it. Hey, Mark, I was talking to a client of mine who leases office space, and he was bemoaning the fact that the self-storage industry is so much more profitable than the office industry. And I was sitting back trying to figure out why, and I guess it comes down to simple math that you guys rent by the cubic yard or the cubic foot, and office space is kind of square footage. And so it automatically makes you kind of nine times more profitable just because you can lease up as well as out.
Well, that is correct, as well as several factors. If you take a look at the U.S. National Self-Storage Association website, you'll see for the last 30 years running that self-storage has been the most profitable real estate business in the United States. It's quite remarkable, and it's been a good kept secret until recently. Mm-hmm. But, so what that means is it makes more than apartments. It makes more than restaurants. It makes more than many things. And it comes down to a couple of things. First of all, it's cheaper to build compared to these other entities per square foot. Mm-hmm. And you rent it more per square foot.
Right.
So that's the great beauty about it. And there's a huge pent-up demand, so the pricing is going up right now.
And so few moving parts compared to most other commercial real estate, right? With the employees, all the requirements of the tenant, right?
Right. There's no painting. There's no backed up toilets. No
right.
midnight calls.
Right.
And just a couple of just a couple of employees.
Right.
I used to do real estate development before I did self storage. I owned apartments and I owned houses, and I would hate it when the phone would ring at 7 o'clock at night and there was no heat. You have mm-hmm. there's no emergency in self storage, and I love that aspect.
Well, you know what, and that kind of really leads into why this can be a very powerful opportunity, like you said, for the busy business professional. But above and beyond that, it truly is a concept that permits semi-absentee and passive ownership. And Mark, I think I can go out on a limb and say, more and more franchisors are saying that they are permitting semi-absentee ownership. But reality is it really possible in certain businesses? I think there's a real fine line that is being walked out there when certain franchisors are classifying themselves as semi-absentee. And when I look at this model, it does permit that semi-absentee passive ownership for exactly the reasons you're just saying. It doesn't have that day in and day out labor-intensive management of many aspects that go into a traditional business.
Well, that is correct. It does take some coaching. Here's a funny thing about self-storage. In any business, usually some are run great, some are run average, and some are run bad. Mm. In self-storage, 95 to 97% are run what we call average, which is pretty bad.
Okay.
They have a clerk in the office who's not a salesperson, who doesn't know how to, be a salesperson or any of that type of typical stuff you'd see with somebody that owns their own business. And the good news is these self-storages are making great six-figure incomes for their owners.
Right. So what
our system...
Oh, I'm sorry,
one step farther, and we have the manuals, the training, the mm-hmm. operation. So we hire sales and marketing people to to maintain our offices. And just to give you an example, the other day I went into a self-storage. I'm always checking them out. Mm-hmm. And the girl behind the counter was watching a movie on the screen, and it took her a couple of seconds to even look up to see me. but that is average in the self-storage building. In ours, we have a script, just like McDonald's. They have to walk around the counter, put their hand out and shake hands and say, "Hey, my name is Mark from, welcome to Storage Authority. Mm-hmm. How can I help you?" And they actually have to call them by name 3 times. And those little features are going to make your self-storage so successful. Mm.
But Mark, I would think that most of the people that walk into a self-storage facility are already sold. They're not browsing. They're not checking out the difference between, because it's all basically a cement pad. So I don't know that the sales factor, once you are opened and once you get your recurring revenue up, it is as crucial an item. I would imagine that having an initial sales hit team to get you to your critical mass of occupancy is the biggest sale feature. And then once you get over and above that, a certain percentage of those units sell themselves as people just sort of wandering in off the street that have stuff they need to put somewhere.
Well, and that's what the whole industry believes. And I'm going to break the news right now. That is 100% incorrect.
Ah, good.
100% incorrect. And if you follow our system, you will double your profits. If you made $200,000 at your mm-hmm. facility, there's not a facility that I can't go into and double their profits. Because think about this: the average person who rents a self storage checks out 4 to 6 self storages before they rent. So that means they had a choice of choosing yours or 5 others, and half the time it's the last one they end up at. If they come into our facility, they are going to get that just right feeling. They love the landscaping. They loved that we knew their name and we talked to them and we had the questions. We showed the unit. We went through the whole sales process with them, as you would expect somebody to do when you're buying anything. And then it comes down to, with that just right feeling, we stop them in their tracks. They rent with us. But lo and behold, our rates are 30% higher than everybody else's rates. And that's all profit, because in the self-storage business, everything after 50% full is profit. It's incredible.
Right.
So if I can charge 30% more than my neighbor, it's a humongous difference, and that's exactly what we do. I mean, you can literally go to our website and in the newsroom. You can see our rates, and you can see our neighbor's rates. What you said you're thinking it's a commodity. And what I'm saying is it's not what's inside the four walls in that concrete pad. It's on what's outside those four walls that makes a difference.
I think every business in existence wants to raise itself from the level of commodity. And that pulls price out of the equation, and that puts service into it. And I think every single business that exists is a service business. And so I think you're exactly right, and I think you're hitting on a very key point. I couldn't imagine shopping 4 or 5 different storage facilities, but if you say that's what people do,
Well,
exactly what they do. Yep.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I know, and actually, I am a walking example of that, having used a storage facility
really?
when I moved out to California. And I know, Mark, I know you did write a book on marketing as well, which it sounds like that's a big piece of what you're talking about. There's one thing when it comes to the real estate play, the construction development, the design, but there's that marketing side of the business as well. It's like any business. There are different pillars and legs that make it successful and that really rise you to the top.
Right. And, just like John says, that, what's the difference between a commodity and non-commodity mm-hmm. in this world? It's sales and marketing. Mm-hmm. And that's the platform that we've provided. And right now there are, self-storage is mostly owned by individuals that own 1 or 2 facilities, mm-hmm. 30,000 to 40,000 of them. And then there's about 10,000 facilities that are owned by large corporations. And these large corporations now have so much money because they're literally given hundreds of millions of dollars a month by the teachers union, by all these people now that they know self-storage is so safe. And so they are starting to gain an advantage because, you know, they'll spend $1 million a month on their website. They'll do all these things. They're still lacking in the sales and marketing, but when it comes to the internet, they can throw money at it. Anything they can just simply throw money at, they're good at.
But they're going to be price driven on that end of the market, I would imagine.
Well, they're very smart people, of course, so, mm-hmm. so they've got their trick. What they do is when you move into one of these REITs, every 5 months and 9 months, they raise your rent $20. Mm-hmm. They figured out for $19, they raise your rent, you won't move. So they've actually figured a trick, and you know, as an individual and on a hometown business, I'm not going to raise somebody's self-storage in $20 in 5 months. I'm just going to have a fair price. But people are learning this. You know, they're getting mm-hmm. burnt with this. They don't move out, but next time they think twice before moving into one of these REITs that, you know, automatically raise their rents in 5 months and 9 months.
Makes sense. So I mean, obviously there are so many upsides to this business. What are some of the downsides or challenges of it?
Well, there's a couple of things. Barrier to entry is one of the things that keeps this thing so profitable. So first of all, you need $400,000 or $500,000 cash. Self-storage is very loan friendly. And so we can get loans as low as 10 to 15% down. Those are SBA loans. Mm-hmm. And if you go that route, you can, you know, get a loan, assuming you got good credit and everything, for self-storage, not only based upon our experience, your business experience, but on the cash flow of the business. So that's one barrier to entry. You know, it's $400,000 or $500,000to get in. Sure. The second barrier to get in this business is, you know, you've got to go through that approval process if you don't buy an existing facility. And so you do need some help to make sure you find the right piece of land. And when you find that piece, you know, that it's going to be a reasonable review process and a reasonable square footage on that property. Mm. And that's my expertise as a civil engineer, helping people go through that process. We are very unique in that. And, you know, most companies like the hotel world, they would charge you $50,000 or $60,000 to go through the development process with you. We don't charge anything for that because, you know, we're a new franchise and we know that's so critical.
Sure.
What is your breakdown between location and cost of a particular piece of real estate as far as a value proposition?
Yeah, you know, if I understand your question correctly, and it varies throughout the United States, obviously something in L.A. costs different than something in Houston that costs something in Denver. So typically the land cost for a profitable self-storage where you're investing $400,000 or $500,000 is somewhere between $500,000 and $1 million to purchase the land.
Mm-hmm. Distance
over a million
versus
1.3. Mm-hmm. You buy smaller pieces of land and you build up multi-story. And multi-story costs more to build, so it's a larger initial investment.
Right.
Makes sense.
No, but I mean, as opposed to being a little bit further away and getting a better deal on the land, as opposed to being right there where you need to be, what kind of analytics do you put on that?
Yeah, there is no difference between one location and another in that sense, because what we do is we do a full feasibility study. So self-storage is a numbers game. It's demand is driven by the population. So we do a demand mm-hmm. study in your area. And, you know, you could be in the city and the demand study is going to come out poor because while you have a lot of population, you could have 10 self-storages in a 3-mile area. You go out in rural America, you do a demand study, you might have one-tenth the population, but you also have one-tenth the competition. So you'll find out that both self-storages make the exact same profit.
It's
what we like to say is the best place to build a self-storage is, you know, is within half an hour of your home. It's the best place to build any business, your first business. It's just easier. So we work with everybody depending on their individual location.
So, Mark, just kind of to wrap up a little bit here, such a, by the way, wealth of information. And, you know, I know you've written a couple books, and those that want to do research on this can go online, and I want to give them your contact information. But before we wrap things up, I have one more question for you. I'll try to leave it at one more. I have a lot more in my head. what is your vision for the franchise system? Like you said, obviously this is an emerging brand. What is your vision?
Well, you know, it doesn't take a lot to go from a small part of the business to a major player in the business. In fact, you know, if you own 25 self-storages, you're in the top 100 operators in the United States. So, you know, we can clearly see, you know, having more than 25 franchises. So, you know, we don't expect it to be that long before we're in the top 25 operator groups because it doesn't take a lot of numbers to do that. The largest operator has 2,000, and most of the REITs have 500 or 600 units that either they manage, own, or joint venture. So we see ourselves, you know, down the road, 5 years, being right in the middle of those top five players, with somewhere, you know, in the 300 to 1,000 facilities as part of our storage authority team. It's going to take a lot of work, a lot of good people, but self storage is going to continue to be profitable, and it's going to be like the hotel business. 40 years ago, 50 years ago, there were no franchises in the hotel business.
Right.
And right now, if you wanted to go to the bank and get a loan, if you're not a franchise, they won't give you a loan.
Right.
So we see the same consolidation going to happen over the next 10 years in self-storage. And we think we can be the best opportunity for people that, you know, really want to own their own business.
Wow, that's a nice combination between ambitious and achievable, I think.
Yes.
Absolutely. So if someone wanted to get in touch with you, obviously they could go through me, which I would welcome working with anybody and getting them connected to you. And if you wouldn't mind providing your social media handles and website and the best way to reach you.
Well, first of all, I do agree that the best way is to speak with Pam. She's certainly an expert on franchising, and she understands our program very well and has that marketing material. After that, you can certainly take a look at our website. It's storageauthorityfranchise.com. And, you know, my direct line is 860-830-6764. And just remind me when you first contact me that Pam sent you to me. I like to keep track of those things.
Well, thank you, Mark. And we always like to say, what's that number again?
It's 860-830-6764.
Great. And again, the website is storageauthorityfranchise.com. Mark, it has been great having you on the show. Really appreciate you calling in. Wealth of information, and looking forward to continuing to work with you.
Yeah, fantastic meeting you, Mark, and continued success.
Thank you very much.
Wow. All righty. Now that was a wealth of information for all of our listeners. I think we have a lot of people's out there. Their wheels are turning.
I was so excited just listening. I'm thinking I should buy a self-storage facility.
I agree.
I mean, what's wrong with that business model, right?
I mean,
definitely, John, from your expertise in terms of people and financing one of his opening statements was about being able to kind of walk away from it and the retirement built in the residual.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. But, and one of the things that we can do is if we can acquire real estate, hold on to it, pay basically ourselves rent for 20 years, that rent becomes an annuity, flips back to the franchise owner. So that is a very, 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 very strong and powerful tool. So The ability to own the real estate and get it inside the franchise business is a tremendous advantage.
Yeah, like you said, because as a franchise, you're much more funds are much more available to you in that model. I mean, I've had rental properties in the past, but it's just like there's so much moving parts of that. And mm-hmm. basically, you could have 30, 50, 100, or a couple, several hundred renters all under one roof.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk after the show, Pam.
I know.
I mean, need to contact you about that.
We'll collectively come together and figure out how to make this happen.
Right. Well, and as he discussed, if there are people out there making money on just having customers fall into the door and just show up, imagine if you had a good, solid, stable franchisor behind you that had a realistic, good marketing approach to it, how much more quickly success would be achievable than trying to open your own place and hoping for the best.
And you know what this makes me think of, John, and I just want to banter here with you for a little bit before we wrap up the show. You were just sharing with me earlier that you heard a commercial, and it really kind of got us chatting about something. Share the commercial.
Well, it was a commercial that an individual business owner was running on the radio saying, "We're not a franchise. We're locally owned and operated and support your local businesses." And I was thinking how misleading that was, because so many franchises or individual owners that are local, that are that meet all the requirements that this particular guy was talking about, and you're not necessarily dealing with a giant corporate headquarters. You know, there's a guy putting his kids through school. There's a guy, you know, with a family to support and all that sort of thing that own these franchises. And we're out there and we're trying to help them, and we're trying to help them be successful. And I guess that how prevalent a misconception that is a topic for discussion.
Right. And a perfect example of that is just on our show last month, you know, we had a franchisee from Zaxby's. She is a multi-unit owner. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You're absolutely right. It is a local business owner, usually, in traditional franchising. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we've got our multi-unit operators out there and investment groups and things like that. But usually, that local franchisee owner is very much involved. I mean, they're getting involved in the community. I mean, she was in the process of really focusing on a fundraising effort for children's cancer research. Mm-hmm. And that's a local business owner, franchisee, that is really getting involved in the community.
And I think Zaxby's has a very good reputation for their franchisees doing exactly that and mm-hmm. being a part of the community.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, it's also, when we just think about the franchise system, it's one of the strengths. You know, I always say franchising is a growth strategy using the talent and the money of others. But you're not going to get a more committed operator of a unit than someone that has an invested interest. They are that local business owner. They do have an invested interest in the success of that, for a lot of the reasons that, you know, that you were just mentioning.
Right.
So another little kind of myth we wanted to collapse there around that. So let's kind of talk about getting ducks in a row. Let's a little bit about the matchmaking process. You and I were chit-chatting about that earlier too.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions that I always have is, you know, the selection process, when you have so many opportunities for people to do, how do you hone in on that? And I think a lot of people tend to want to gravitate toward things that they are particularly adept at. And maybe the opposite is true, because you want a franchisor that's strong mm-hmm. at things you're weak at. And is that part of the process?
Yeah, it is. I think sort of a myth very often when someone is considering a franchise ownership is that they need to have maybe that direct skill set.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, you want to have confidence in your talent and your skills. However, part of the reason why you're becoming a franchisee is because you are having a dependency on what the franchisor is bringing to the table. That's what you're licensing the rights for. So, it's definitely tapping into something that is going to, let's just say, that is going to definitely utilize your strengths, your talents, in building that business. But those strengths and those talents have to be complementary to what the franchisor is actually providing you. So it is really sort of a complementary match. I always like to use the analogy of painting, right? Why would I want to become a franchisee that does residential commercial painting? I know how to paint a room. Well, it scales much wider than that, right? It's not just knowing how to paint a room. It's how do you go about capitalizing on that brand? How do you go about capitalizing on the fact that you are part of a system? You're not just that independent individual out there trying to make it. How do you go about capitalizing on economies of scale and being able to get, the tools and the products that you need because you have greater purchasing power when you're part of a system? How do you go about capitalizing on those best practices for acquiring your customer base? What are some of the best sales and marketing strategies that are out there? So it's not just a painting business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Anything you'd like to add to that?
Well, it is the multiplier effect and, you know, how much money you can make standing behind a brush as opposed to how much money you can spend or make being in front of a particular client or a set of clients. Mm-hmm. And what can you do as far as in that particular case, you know, upselling, somebody comes in, somebody calls you about painting one room, and if you can sell them to doing four and doing the outside, maybe doing some recurring revenue and coming back and doing a contract to come back, you know, in a period of time. But that's how you get the multiplier. And yes, you know, anybody can paint a room. Who can paint it properly and who can find people that need it
I don't know if anybody can paint a room. I'm just saying you're in the studio with someone who cannot. However, you did hit on something and obviously the need to make money in any business that you're in. So when we think about matchmaking, a big piece is really understanding what does that financial business model look like? What does the pro forma look like? What kind of advice can you give there?
But let me finish with that and say that, you know, the skill maybe in that painting type franchise is finding employees that will show up, that'll do a good job, that are either trainable or already skilled, that are just looking for places to be and work. And I think that might be the biggest skill set there, whether it's a maid service business or whatever. Just finding employees that will show up and will be conscientious in doing the job. Yeah. And maybe your personnel or human resources skills are the biggest value add to that particular concept. Because you can sell all day long and people don't appear to do the work, then you're not getting anywhere.
Good point. Really good point. Absolutely. So many different parts of the business that need to be managed too. And if it's a labor-based business, hiring the right people is going to be a huge differentiator, and keeping those employees, making sure they're happy, and all of those things. What would, for someone who is looking at franchise ownership, and they're going through that process, right? We all know the process. They're looking at, okay, what is it I want in a business? What criteria am I looking for in a business? Home-based, retail-based? Am I looking to have product or service? Am I comfortable managing people or not managing people? Do I want to manage inventory or not manage to inventory? So we really want to take a look at all of these different areas of criteria to identify what could be some good businesses for consideration. Then we have to take a deeper look and say, we got to look underneath the hood and say, does this financially make sense?
Right. Well, and can you let go of the stuff that you realize that you may or may not be particularly good at, mm-hmm. you know, and say, all right, I need to, rather than create a pyramid of business, I need to create a hub and spoke and say, I'm not really good at this particular segment, so I'm going to subcontract that out. Mm. That's the nature of my business, you know, because 40% of the people that start a business or buy a franchise, say bookkeeping, accounting, and taxes, are their number one fear and their number one reservation about actually going into business.
Agreed.
So if you can just take that and farm it out to me, that's one spoke in the wheel you don't have to worry about anymore. And typically that's the thing that people are the worst at.
That makes perfect sense. No,
nobody buys a business because they want to do bookkeeping and payroll, correct?
Absolutely not.
And then on the other side, you do need a solid financial foundation. I mean, in this business that Mark was talking about, I mean, you look at the initial investment being very high. That leads to more of a passive investment. If your entry level is $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, you're gonna have to believe that that's gonna be very labor intensive, very hands on, and something you have to build for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the cost benefit between what cash you have available and how much time you have available.
Ah, yeah, excellent point. With the so there's kind of two sides of that. You kind of have to take a look at before deciding what business you choose to license or franchise you choose to license. You have to look at things on the front end. And one of the key steps there on the financial side is to make sure you're validating with those franchisees that are part of that system and really can speak to what their experience has been to get up and running and start pulling an income out of it.
Right.
And then the other side of it, like you just pointed out, is on the operational side. Once you become a franchisee, you still have to manage to the books. You have to manage those employees. You still have tax to worry about. And you're right. The average individual is not comfortable with that. And that's where, obviously, your services come into play.
Well, that's what we like to think and what we like to believe. You know, I was up in Chicago. This is a funny story. I was up in Chicago, and I went to a Dunkin' Donuts with a friend of mine one morning. And I don't know if it's the way I look around when I walk into a business, but I happen to have a lot of Dunkin' Donut clients. And I got my coffee, and I'm sitting down, and the owner came in and sat next to me. And he brought me a couple products that he was sampling, and he was thinking about using. What do you think about this? And I'm thinking about rearranging this. And, you know, I had a chat with him for about 5 or 10 minutes. And, you know, my friend, after the guy left, said, how did he know? And I said, I don't know. I guess it's just the way I look around when I walk into a particular business. So my question for you is, do you do the same thing? Mm. Do you walk into a business and say, heck, I can sell 100 of these. This is a franchisable concept. Or this is, you know, they just happen to be in the lobby of a very crowded hotel and customers fall in and it's not a reproducible concept.
Yeah.
Do you do that same thing in your head?
Yeah, I do. I definitely do to some degree. As a matter of fact, I frequently have founders of concepts. They come to me and say, well, I want a franchise. I want to franchise this. This is how I want to grow. Right. And, you know, yeah, that sounds great on the surface. And franchising is mm-hmm. a wonderful growth strategy. But there definitely is a feasibility assessment that needs to take place. That's not something you can just walk in and look around and determine that, yes, this is something that is franchisable. However, if you start peeling back the layers and really start doing that assessment of identifying, okay, what are some of the key criteria that really make this concept franchisable? Is it repeatable? Is it sustainable? Are there proven systems in place? John, is it profitable?
We don't make any money, but we have a lot of fun working here. Right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah,
but I've seen restaurants that, you know, 200-300-year-old restaurants that are, you know, established, authentic, and quaint or have been around forever. And then you just try to close your eyes and picture what that would look like in a mall or a strip center setting with all their authentic stuff on the wall being plastic reproductions. Mm-hmm. And you go, that doesn't really translate, does it? Or mm-hmm. can it? Or how can it? Or what do we have to make different? Mm-hmm. And I think that for a franchise developer, I think that would be a very interesting and fun part of the business.
Yeah. Other things that I like to take a look at if really trying to identify if a concept is franchisable is how many years have they been in the business? Mm-hmm. You know, do they have a track record? Is there a degree of history? Preferably a minimum of 3 years of operational history. Obviously, we need to have profitability, and we need to build in some other percentages in that mm-hmm. financial model, such as the royalty percentages, the ad fee. So all of that has to be figured out. You know, does it financially work? And, you know, and just taking a look at the marketplace. You mm-hmm. know, we're always looking, okay, is this a fragmented marketplace, mm-hmm. kind of like we were talking about with Storage Authority? Is it somewhat of a unique concept? Is it playing in a niche? I kind of giggle to myself because I go, you know, is it really a new business concept? Or are they revolutionizing a business idea that's already been out there? And I'm going to use an example. I was just talking to a fellow consultant about this. There is a maid service, an emerging franchisor, two maids and a mop. And they're starting to get quite a bit of notoriety. And the reason is because they have created some technology apps that are allowing them to run that business differently. They're sort of revolutionizing maid service.
Right.
Mm. Kind of like Uber, right? Uber and Lyft, they took that taxi mm-hmm. service and they revolutionized it.
Yeah, you want to talk about labor-intensive business. I mean, that's what a maid service is.
And, absolutely.
You know, if you got to have two people to clean a particular house, and you have to find the house, then you have to find the two people. And sometimes you have a lot of inventory of houses and you don't have employees, or you have vice versa, and you have to grow those out together. Mm. The other downside is once you hire a maid and she's very, very, very comfortable with the owners of the houses she's working on, are they going to try to cut you out of the deal and mm-hmm. say, all right, I pay the maid service $100, they pay you $40, I'll pay you $60, and we'll get rid of them.
Right, and every business has its different challenges.
Sure, no question.
Yeah, and then the question becomes is how do you try to close that loop of the challenges that are out there with particular businesses?
Right.
Yeah. And with that being said, you know, when you think about other, I guess...
Well, that's why that application or those other things that you were talking about that this new service has, that makes it different. You're just not hiring two people. You are hiring a system. Again, going back to Mark earlier, mm-hmm. you're rising from the level of commodity to something that's full service.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Let's kind of talk a little bit more about what does make a business franchisable. You know, obviously... with the franchisor, the founder that is taking their concept, packaging it to franchise it, they have to be financially healthy. Are they properly funded to make it happen? Because there's a cost associated with taking your concept and franchising it.
Yes.
So it needs to be properly funded. Is it something that can be taught to others? You know, to your point about the system,
right?
Sure, you have to have a system, but is it something that can easily be taught and transferred to other business owners so they can run the operations?
There are so many businesses out there that have developed that way. You know, if you take a doctor or a lawyer or even an accountant and you say, all right, can we create another John Q. in Toledo?
Never.
Right. Well, that's what I see. How much of my business is just my personality, my skill set, my personal interaction with my clients? Mm-hmm. Can we take that and package it and move it over? Well, we're finding that, you know, in urgent care franchises and things like that, we can a little bit in the medical profession do things like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there are legal franchises or law firm franchises now out there that are doing that as sort of partnerships. And so it's a unique thing on how to package it. And, you know, like anything else, it all comes down to service, and it all comes down to how do we take care of the clients, and how do the clients feel leaving your place of business as opposed to how they felt when they walked in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously in a restaurant, they walked in hungry. They came out, they weren't hungry, right?
That's right. I would say anyone that is thinking about going into business for themselves, one of the key questions they need to be asking themselves is, how am I going to go about acquiring my customer base or my clients? How am I going to go about acquiring that? And then how am I going to go about keeping them, right?
Right.
So, two very key questions to ask yourself if you're moving into business.
I think there are some people that go into the business that say, I want to sell one thing to everybody in the world once. I don't care if they ever come back. And it is kind of a commodity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is buying blindly on Amazon as opposed to going into a store and touching and feeling. And, you know, you look at retail businesses and the challenges they're having now to where they can't provide that value add of coming in and touching and feeling,
mm-hmm.
you know, and if you can't, then you're going to have that internet pressure.
So kind of bringing this full circle again underneath, is a concept franchisable? And as you know, one of the strengths behind franchising is building the brand, right? Brand awareness, which hopefully then what we're talking about right now will also help with customer acquisition because
sure.
you have that customer awareness.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that, in speaking with someone that might be considering franchising their concept that we need to take a look at is, okay, well, what is your current brand name? Is it a business name that can be trademarked, by federally
right.
registered? Is that possible? And if not, it's not necessarily doesn't mean that you cannot franchise it. It just means that you're going to have to take a step back and say, okay, how are we going to maybe rename or rebrand ourselves for franchising purposes?
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to consider when you're buying a franchise, how many locations do you have to have in a particular city before mm-hmm. you have brand identification?
Yeah.
You know, in Atlanta, is it 20? Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 100? You know, in a smaller town, it might be less. And in New York, you know, so that's all got to be factored in as well.
And that gets into the whole development strategy, right?
Mm-hmm.
What is your development strategy as an emerging franchise system? And again, if someone is considering taking their concept and franchising it, we need to take a step back and say, let's take a look at, you know, how many units can really be put in place?
Right.
And what does it take to support those units and have it make sense? And very often we'll start off regionally and then recommend expanding from there because I think a myth, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, another myth that very often happens in the franchise world is that, you just build it and they'll come, or and that is not that much work, and it's a lot of work, right?
There's no question about it. And again, if you're under the illusion that you're going to buy a franchise that has five locations in Houston or Dallas, and you're going to bring the first one to Atlanta, and you're going to have brand identification, you're mistaken. It's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen.
So you have to be strong on the sales and marketing side to get people to understand what this product is.
That's right. And yes, brand is a obviously a great benefit of, a more mature franchise system. But
sure.
Majority of franchise systems are out there are smaller and emerging.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tell a quick story here, and then we'll kind of wrap up our show. I was speaking to someone who actually owned a couple of Great Clips and out on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And she shared with me, she goes, no one knew when I came into the system who Great Clips were. So she goes, I did not have the benefits of the brand on the West Coast. She goes, so it took time to build it. It ended up, you know, obviously working out fabulously for her. But to your point, she really had to build that in that region, that area, just because it didn't have that brand recognition on that side of the country.
Absolutely. Yep.
Well, John, I have to say, I have it's just been such a pleasure having you on the show, not only as a guest, but actually as a co-host. And you are always just such a wealth of knowledge. And
I just have to learn to be quiet every once in a while.
Oh,
that's all.
Never. That would not make a radio show much fun if you were quiet, right?
We gotta bring out information from other people, right?
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. You know what? For our guests that are listening, would you mind just kind of sharing, just give a recap of your services and how someone could get in touch with you?
Okay, sure. And I appreciate that opportunity.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm John Quatrochi. I'm a CPA. I work on the north side of Atlanta, and we work with a lot of franchisors, franchisees, multi-unit operators, and other general business owners. You know, the cornerstone of our company is providing complete outsourced bookkeeping, accounting, taxes, and financial management. And we say from concept to implementation to success to legacy or empire building is what we like to be right next to the business owner the whole way and the whole process. Again, with you, I think when we first met, you were a W-2 employee working for a company. You mm-hmm. had your idea. We implemented it. We've reached success, and now we're working on your empire building, right?
Absolutely. That's exactly right.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of empire building, Rich Casanova here on the Pro Business Channel. You're listening to Franchise Business Radio, and we want to talk about Pam's empire building here, the host.
Yeah. There you go.
Great show, by the way. I was on social media, I was saying how not only amazing the content from your guest earlier, mm-hmm. The call-in guest, but I'm thinking I should talk to John about money and buying a that self-storage facility franchise. I mean, it has so many upsides to it.
Yes.
This whole idea of, and so we're going to talk after the show, but get all my money in the row here. But
there you go.
But first of all, so Pam, talk to us a little bit about your empire and what you do, what hats that you wear in the franchise industry. We know that you're over 20 years in franchising, traditional corporate America. And you have a unique perspective from that standpoint, but how do you help, you know, people on a regular basis?
Yeah, I actually, as you know, from previous shows, I do work with individuals who are considering business ownership, kind of like what John and I were talking about earlier, is really kind of coming in and helping someone do that analysis of what is it you're looking for in a business, what, you know, and then from there, I'm able to recommend several businesses for consideration and really hold their hand through the process and hopefully help them be effective in doing their due diligence in determining what is going to be a good franchise for them.
That business matchmaker, yeah.
Yeah, that business matchmaker. And then above and beyond that, as you know, I do, you know, I've seen the franchise business model from all different right. perspectives. So that really puts me in a position of being able to consult and work with franchisors, depending on where they are. And if you do have someone, we were talking about someone who might want to take their concept and franchise it.
Right, right.
If that's the case, you know, obviously reach out to me. I can guide you to the appropriate resources there. I'm quite the franchise connector.
Right, exactly, yeah.
Well, I mean, especially, you know, if you're going to take $400,000 as a down payment into a business, that's a decision that you shouldn't take lightly. You shouldn't take on your own. You should talk to somebody that's been in the industry, that's an expert, that knows what she's doing, and then can guide you and direct you as far as what is the best place for you and how does that all work.
Yeah, not just picking your franchise from flipping through a book or whatever, a directory.
Exactly.
And one thing that's unique, people may not be aware of. I mean, we know it because we've been doing the show for so long, and you know it as an industry expert or insider. But they can consult with you, and there's no fees involved, right?
That's right. It's complimentary. It's business model is very similar to what I call corporate recruiter, you know, compensated by the franchisor when we bring them that qualified franchisee, which means these services and finding a business are complimentary and free to the individual.
And for the franchisor, it's a great program too, because you've kind of vetted them, and they've rather than them just, they're one of 100 different franchises that are just, you know, searching randomly and making those phone calls and emails and taking up their time, and they're not really qualified or have the finances, or it's not a good fit. When you connect with them, many times this is what they've decided to do.
Yeah, it really is a perfect business model, because all of the parties involved win. You know, the individual gets a free consultation. The franchisor has someone that's helping recruit qualified franchisees, and obviously, I'm being appropriately compensated for my services by the franchisor. Yeah.
I don't know if you have time to talk about training that you do also, right?
Yeah, a little bit of a passion of mine. Yeah. By the way, I'm going to put a little plug out there. You know, as a franchise consultant, you are typically affiliated with a network.
Okay.
And I'm affiliated with Network FranServe. And definitely planning on having the new leadership of FranServe on the show in the future.
Oh, nice.
And not only am I affiliated with this particular network, I'm also the director of training. So what I do is I train other consultants on how to be effective as a business matchmaker, to use your words.
Right. Well, and speaking of future shows, a little teaser as well, stay tuned for an upcoming episode. One of your newest guests or coming franchises talking about social media, right?
That's so there's, right.
You may have a social media, and it's a franchise, right?
Do you know what? I'm going to have to learn a little bit more about it. Yeah. I think he might be a resource that serves franchises. I don't think they are necessarily. We'll find out.
Yeah, exactly. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Right. That's a nice teaser.
All right. John, Pam, we'll see you guys next time. Closing
thoughts. Thank you, Rich.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Rich.
Absolutely. Our pleasure.
Thank you again for joining Pam Curie and her guests on the Pro Business Channel. Use the social media links here to share today's show and stay tuned for the next episode of the Franchise Business Radio Show.